this is Susie Larson. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of Live the Promise. You know, shows like this are made possible because of your continued support of Faith Radio. To learn more, please check out our website at myfaithradio.com. Welcome to Hour 2 of Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for joining us today. And if you just tuned in, you missed my first hour conversation with my dear friend Tessa Afshar. She's a novelist, and she wrote a book on the life of Ruth. A fantastic conversation. Tessa always has such great things to say. Well, now we're switching gears, talking to another friend of mine, Chris Fabry. And I said before the show, he and I were talking, he's sort of a superhero, and you'll find out why, all the stuff that this guy juggles. But he's just written a brand new novel that's based around the Song of Solomon, which is based around a movie called The Song. And so we're going to talk about that today. We've got four copies to give away. I don't want to waste another moment. Let me tell you about my guest, and we'll get him on the show. Chris Fabry is an award-winning author and radio personality who hosts the daily program Chris Fabry Live on Moody Radio. He's also heard on Love Worth Finding, Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, and other radio programs. He and his wife, Andrea, now live in Arizona and are the parents of, listen, 9 children. You can find his influencer page on our website at myfaithradio.com. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Susie, it's great, and you had the audacity to have me on after Tessa. There's nothing more to say.
No, you guys are, well, you're in leagues all of your own. That's just, that's the truth.
I love her. I love her message, love her writing, award winner. Yeah, I'm sure you had a great time with her.
I think you might be an award winner, too, so, right? I mean, if we're honest.
Awards are so weird, you know? I mean, the things that you think that you do that are worthy, perhaps, or will last for a little bit. Mm-hmm. People kind of go, huh.
Yeah.
And then other things, you know, they are noticed when you don't know that they ever will be. So mm-hmm. I thank God for the encouragement that comes if you ever do win an award. But I don't live for it, as you know.
Yes.
You know, you do what you do. You do what God's given you to do, and you keep on going.
And you keep on going. That's so true. Well, you've been on the show a good handful of times before, Chris, so you know the drill. We love to start out talking scripture and just, you know, finding out what verse is just standing out to our guests each day. And you chose Proverbs 22:29. Do you see someone skilled in their work? They will serve before kings. They will not serve before officials of low rank. Great passage. Unpack that one for us.
Well, I think it was on the 22nd that you asked me to come on, so that was what I was looking at that day. And I looked at all the different translations of that, New American Standard. Do you see a man skilled in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before obscure men. Mm. And then the King James talks about a man being diligent in his business. He shall stand before kings. He shall not stand before mean men. And you go throughout. I got the Moody Bible Commentary out and looked that said, this kind of guy's going places. He will stand before, and gals too, he will stand before kings and not before obscure men. That is, his skillful services come to be in such demand that he can serve only the upper echelons of society, and only they can afford him.
Mm.
It's a good motivation to work hard, continue to grow in one's skills, and push for excellence. And I think of the life of Christ and where he wound up at the end of his earthly ministry before these kings, and it was his ability to remain silent, you know, and to suffer that was our redemption. You think of Paul, who was told he was going to stand before kings and give this message, you know, in chains and writing it. And so I don't think, you know, there's almost a part of this verse that makes you think, well, you're going to do so well that you get to, you know, serve people and you make a lot of money. I don't think that's what it's saying.
Right.
I think it says, whatever you are given to do, this goes back to the Colossians 3 passage, whatever you're given to do, you work at it with all your heart, and God is going to do something in you that will allow you to do whatever it is that you do in front of people who may give you opportunities to do this in a way that you never know. And I'm thinking, I had Jenny Owens on the program today. You know her music. She's a great artist. She writes some great songs. Well, here she was, 2 years old. She was blind. Her mom, because she was picking out on the piano, Jesus Loves Me, and just couldn't stand it anymore. she gave her music lessons. And she stayed faithful to that, and she sang in the White House, you know? I mean, yeah. It led her all the way to the White House.
Amazing.
So I would say this is, as Proverbs 22:29 is mirrored in Psalm 119:46. I will speak of your decrees before kings and not be ashamed. Whatever you're given to do, whether you're a plumber, a pipe fitter, a parent, do it with all that you have in you, and this is going to be noticed by other people. You don't do it to be noticed, but this is the outworking. And it kind of follows in with the conversation, the book, and the story that we're talking about here today, because the main character does this. He just runs passionately toward music, and it leads him to sing in front of some really powerful people. But it also points out some of the struggles in his own heart. And I know we'll get into that, mm-hmm. but that's what I have for you today.
Well, I really appreciate that because, you know, he does bless the diligent. The Bible does say that. And as you're talking, Chris, I'm thinking of that other proverb. I don't have the exact reference right now, but it says, do not claim a place among the great. Better to be called up than be asked to step back, basically, yes. My paraphrase. And I know we've had conversations about this before. That's so often the culture. Like, I'm holding out for management. I've never worked a day in my life, but I'm holding up for management, you know what I mean? Where we want to claim a place among the great, and that's our whole driving motivation for 5 minutes of fame, no matter what we're famous for. This, what you just said, turns that ideal on its head, basically, yeah. Where we are diligent, and God does, in due time, call us up to serve as we are steward those small opportunities. And Chris, even you look at some of the people in Scripture, most of them that did great things were pulled out of obscurity, weren't they?
Well, and they had, usually at the beginning, they have this desire for greatness. And even think of Joseph and the dreaming thing, you know. There wasn't anything wrong with him having dreams. But you can see in his own country, this wasn't getting him anywhere because his brothers were even. But even that, you know, he was skilled in his dreams. He stayed true. And what happened in Egypt? What happened with Pharaoh? He brought him to a very high place in his land and then was the salvation of his own people as well as the people there. So, we so much focus on what we do in this culture, especially guys like me, you know, the first question. So what do you do and what do you do? And we don't focus very much on who we are or the being, what is. And what we do should come out of what is and what we're moving toward, you know, every day. And you can get this doer mentality that just goes out there and you know, does the job. You can do the job. You can learn how to do the job. When you do that in your own strength, it's not something that, you know, who needs God when you're doing it in your own strength? So I'm continually being brought back to that place of where you feel the weakest and where you feel very incompetent. That's where God can work the best.
Isn't that the truth? Wow. Well, before we get into the content of this book, and I have so many questions for you about how you write a novel after the movie's been written, but would you mind, Chris, just giving us a little backstory on your faith journey, how you came to faith, and just how God really started to put different dreams in your heart and how you found yourself walking through some of these doors?
Sure. Yeah, and you stop me when I get going on this. I grew up in a small town in West Virginia, back in the hills, and I just had a conversation with my mom last night, and she said that she's going to have her 88th birthday this weekend, and she said, if you had known where I came from, you wouldn't believe it. Because she grew up in a little coal mining town in West Virginia, and my dad was born in a coal mining town, and they met outside of the coal fields, were married, and were churchgoers. They were very, they were there, they tithed every week, and they believed everything that was said. But what was said from the pulpit wasn't the real gospel. It was, do, and it wasn't the grace of God. And she heard on Back to the Bible, on a secular radio station, she heard Back to the Bible, and gave her life to Christ. My dad did. Our whole family, you know, heard this news, and we kind of started on a quest. And when I was a teenager, I realized, you know, I'm a sinner and I need Christ's forgiveness. It really became solidified when I went to college and I got involved in an intervarsity Christian fellowship group there after a couple of the professors from the university went to our little church, Evangelical Free Church, and they started pouring their lives into us and going through Ephesians and, you know, some other Bible studies. And so I just felt like if God is real and if he, you know, has forgiven me and given me an opportunity to live for him, I want to do it as much as I can. I don't know how to do that. Married in the final year of college, moved to Chicago, went to Moody Bible Institute, studied there, thinking we'd go on to missionary service. Because if you're doing missions work or pastoring, that's the only way you can serve God. That's what I thought. And I had this background in TV news and radio. I'd been doing that since high school. And my professor said to me, so don't you think God can use this kind of thing? Don't you think he can do that? And so I opened my mind to that, and boy, it's been 30 years of doing that kind of thing, both writing and speaking, you know, talking on the radio and processing life together with people like you, and that's kind of the story.
Wow, such an amazing story. And Chris, you really have stewarded it so well, so humbly, and you've made yourself available to people, you know, like me when I was first starting out, and such an encouragement. So I love that God gave you the platform he did, because I just feel like you stewarded so well. Just want to say that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I have to get Jerry Jenkins in here, too, because Jerry was at Moody, and I really wanted to write. And he was the first one who said to me, you know, if you really are serious about this, I can help you. So I don't think anybody has published or has a platform without somebody else or a bunch of somebody else's coming alongside.
True. So true. We need to take a quick short break here. But, you know, as someone who writes nonfiction, I mean, I just have so many friends who are fiction writers. That's a whole different animal. I think far more difficult. And I marvel. As I'm reading your novels, Ted, that's my producer. I'm waving off to him. As I'm reading your novels, Chris, I'm thinking in my head, the guy has 9 kids. He's live radio. Oh, and he helps out with Gary Chapman's show. And he's a crafted novelist. And I just marvel. I really do. I don't mean that to be flattery, but I marvel at that you're so skilled in all these different areas. I just celebrate that, Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah. What are you supposed to say to that? Sorry, I didn't mean to embarrass you. So anyway, talking to Chris Faber, we've got a few copies of his new novel, The Song. Even the wisest of men was a fool for love. We'd love to get a copy in your hands. We've got a question for Chris. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. You can email me if you've got a question. Susie@myfaithradio.com. Susie@myfaithradio.com. Talking more with Chris Faber about the song, the story, and even his own faith journey, how he balances it all. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Are you Jed Kane?
Yes.
Where's Jordan?
This is your place, then.
My dad's.
It's beautiful.
The song is a modern-day telling of the life of Solomon. I play a character named Jed King, who is the Solomon character. He's a singer-songwriter, kind of living in his father's shadow, as you can imagine. And then he falls in love with Rose Jordan, and because of that love, he writes a song for her when they get married called The Song that propels him to stardom and then kind of deals with the struggles and distractions of life as he attempts to prioritize his family and marriage and things that really matter in and amongst those distractions.
Marry me. I had a dream.
So a while back, I interviewed Alan Powell and Allie Faulkner. They're stars. They play Jed and Rose in the film The Song. Talking to Chris Faber right now. Chris, I'm so curious, first of all, how you got connected with the project. So the film came out, and then you were commissioned to write the novel. Is that right?
Yeah, it was, you know, kind of backwards from what you would think. And it's the first book I've ever had a novel that has pictures in it, and they're gorgeous. None of them are about me, but they're about the story. Richard Ramsey is a filmmaker who came up with this idea after Kyle Adelman's messages in his church, and then I believe he also used some messages from Alistair Begg in Ohio. And it's just like we need to tell this story, especially with the whole 50 Shades of Grey thing, you know, right. That's out and distorts what real love is, especially sensual love, a love between a man and his wife. And so they came to me and said, the publisher that had this Tyndale said, we know that you can write and that you can write rather quickly and that you can get at the heart of what a story is. And I said, I'd love to try. And I met with Richard and some other folks from their ministry to kind of, so how much leeway can I have here and how far back can we go in Rose's story and Jed's story and what do you not want to do? One of the things they didn't want to go into is too much was about his father's story, David. But if you've seen the beginning of the film, there's like this 2 or 3 minutes that's just this visceral fall from grace, forgiveness thing, twist, death and may, it's all captured in this very artistic 2 minutes that I'd never seen anything like that in a Christian movie before. And I use that term loosely. I think people are Christians. I don't think movies or books are Christian, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a message here that we want to get out, but we don't want to beat people over the head with it. And so I just came alongside them and I asked Richard, how much leeway, and he said his thing to me was that I just loved. He said, this is the room that you're in. Now you can just sling the cat as far as you want. and I knew what he meant.
Yeah.
Don't go outside the boundaries, but at the same time, use your creativity, use your ingenuity, ask good questions, because that's what a fiction writer does.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, Susie, it was so freeing. You would think if all of the story is already there, it's going to be a very boring thing to do. But it was exactly the opposite. What happened was all of the pressure was off, because when I write a story, and I'm editing one now that I've been working on for more than a year, all of the onus is on me. All the pressure is on me to make all of the plot things come together and to make it not look like coincidence and, these types of things. It was all decided before I ever put one word down on the page. I didn't have to worry about it. They had already told the story. All I had to do was ask the get behind the scenes, pull the veil back from what you see in the film, and paint, for example, Rose's relationship with one of her best friends from childhood that you don't have time for in a movie, but you can, you can kind of poke and prod and twist in the novel. So I just found it to be a really liberating process.
Wow, I'm so glad. And it did give you a chance, I would imagine, to develop those characters because, like Rose and her friend, I loved the depth of those characters because they had conflict. They were so in it for each other. But girlfriends have those kinds of things. And so it was just felt so authentic. Wow, it's really, really great. Well, for those who haven't seen the film yet, I believe the DVD comes out February 1st. Give the basic plot of the story.
Basically, Jed's father makes this really bad choice in his life, and he has this fall from grace, and there is this fallout. And then Jed comes along, and he kind of pours his life into his son. And before his dad dies, and this all happens at 2 minutes into the movie, before his dad dies, basically the mantle is passed to Jed, and you see this musical gift kind of come alive in him. And then the movie begins to deal with his struggle, his rise to fame, and he thinks that fame and fortune and everything that goes with it is what he's looking for. And he meets this, he loses his agent, he meets this young woman at a little weekend getaway type thing. It's on a farm, it's a winery, and so he is the he's the special artist, and they meet and they fall in love, and it's on their honeymoon that he comes up with this song. Now, he has not had a hit. He's not been noticed. He's sung at really small places throughout the Midwest, but when he writes this thing, everything changes. It's just like it explodes. And that is so much of our culture today. I feel like we live in a voice or American Idol culture where we're looking for that one thing that's going to explode, and we think, once I get there, if I can win that or if I can get on that show or do this, do that, then I will make it, and then everything's going to happen after that. Well, it does. And he exceeds his own expectations, and the song just catapults them, and they have, you know, all this money starts coming their way, and he's taking jet planes back home just to spend the night with, you know, his wife and his new son who comes along. But there are cracks and fissures in his dream. You know, there are these little slivers of himself that he kind of gives into, compromises that he makes, not clear boundaries that he sets for himself and for those around him, although at the beginning he does. He has these very clear boundaries, you know, no groupies back here, that kind of thing. And then he meets this other young performer, and they begin playing together, singing together. It exponentially, you know, it boosts their ratings out there, and problems ensue from there. That's kind of the gist of the story, and I got to tell some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, because Rose, when they're having that weekend thing when Jed comes, you see that there's a guy who has spurned Rose. There's this Eddie character, and you see a little bit of the back and forth with her and Eddie. I get to tell the rest of the story in the book. You know, you see a flash of it kind of on the screen, but I get to tell, here's what really happened behind the scenes there. And Richard and the others liked what we did with that.
Well, like I said, you did just such a great job. We just have a few minutes before break, but I want you just to speak to the idea of this whole pursuit of 5 minutes of fame in our culture. And again, there's even that celebrity-drivenness amidst Christianity. And sometimes we equate success and fame with faithfulness and fruitfulness, but they're not always one and the same. In fact, when you look at just reading Jed's story and you follow any of these stars, that kind of platform is usually not conducive to a marriage, which a thriving marriage requires humility, dying to yourself, putting one another ahead of yourself. Just speak to that, if you would.
Yeah. Well, and it's so much, like you say, even in the church, you know, how many pastors are struggling because they've kind of plateaued at a certain number? And it doesn't really matter what that number is. Everybody is, you know, judging this externally, not judging it from the inside. And it goes back to what we were talking about. We are so do-oriented rather than be-oriented. When you look at discipleship, there is a certain sense that you can judge this on the outside of, you know, you following Christ. When Jesus called the guys at the side of the lake, you know, they put down their nets. You could tell that they put down their nets. But there were things, rough edges, that had to be knocked off of Peter's life. and obedience that has to, that you really can't tell on the surface, because it's all a heart level. So I struggle with this too, you know, with my writing and doing the things that I do. How do you measure that? And at the end, there is an audience of one that you have to please, and you have to fight to keep those other voices, the cacophony, you know, from yelling at you, you don't measure up, you don't do this. No, if you're a success in his eyes, then that's okay. You can live with that, but that's not very easy to do.
Yeah, wow. I remember interviewing Karen Kingsbury, and she said that her dad told her, both your worst critics and your biggest fans, what they say isn't necessarily true. You know, just pay attention to what God says, because you can be swayed by the wind, by those extreme critics and the extreme praise. And neither are really that good for the soul, you know. Yeah. Talking to Chris Faber, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about his family, his faith, all the stuff that he's doing. And we've got a few copies to give away. You're sure quiet today. I'd love to hear from you. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. More with Chris Faber in just a moment.
I had a dream.
About what?
Your new song. I've been
waiting on you. After he writes the song and is propelled into stardom, at that point, you know, there's just very relatable things that both she and he have to deal with. Her trying to stay at home while he's out on tour, trying to take care of their child, her aging father, things that women really really do deal with. So I felt very blessed to play a role that I think may speak to the hearts of what people are going through.
That was Allie Faulkner. I interviewed both her and Alan Powell. They're the stars of the movie The Song, which the DVD comes out February 1st. It's based on the book The Song of Solomon. And then Chris Fabry was commissioned to write the novel after the movie had been written, which was such an interesting challenge. And talking to Chris today, and Chris, there's this theme in the book of family legacy and even generational sin. And you do so much work on the radio in your own daily live show and even your work with Dr. Gary Chapman. I know you've covered these topics before, family legacy and even generational sin. What have you learned along the way about both of those things?
Well, the pain that brings, you know, the pain of somebody's choices, the choices that Jed makes initially seem very innocent, but they lead deeper and deeper into a lifelong then struggle that he has. And I asked Richard Ramsey, who kind of brought this to life in the film script, I said, what is the main thing that you're trying to get across here? And he said, I guess you could sum it up like this: don't commit adultery. I mean, that's it, mm-hmm. Period. Don't commit adultery. You're going to have a lot of problems in your life if you don't avoid this. And it's not just about, and it's also not about, you know, can there be life after you make a big mistake in your marriage? Absolutely. And this is also shown in the film and the story as well. But I think avoiding some of the traps, we talked about Proverbs 22 at the beginning of the hour. Look at Proverbs 7, 6 and 7 are going through this. You know, it's almost like an animal being caught in a trap. How do you avoid something like that? And my guess is there are probably people in your audience right now who are nodding and saying, if I had it to do over again, and there's all this shame and the struggle that you've gone through to get over that, or to, you know, get your marriage back together after a big mistake like that. And God can give you the power to do that. I really believe he can. But it is a real struggle. And so if you can avoid that, that's one of the main messages that I think they hope to get across and that I did as well. Put some hedges in your life, mm-hmm. and have people. And that's the other thing Jed doesn't do. He doesn't have anybody in his life who can stand up to him and say, look, this is wrong. He puts all these people, musicians and others, and his agent, who are in it for themselves. And they have a big stake in him succeeding. So when he does something, you know, bad or untoward, they look the other way. And there's nobody that will, well, in the novel, I pick out a couple of people to do that, you know, just to kind of show that he has this stubborn streak in him. But if you don't have that community, in community, that is where God will help bring you back on course rather than straying.
You know, we did a whole show once, Chris, on how and why to guard our hearts, guard our lives. And I'll never forget it. A listener called in and her voice was cracking up. And she said, you know, given the current state of my marriage, I thought that the burden of obedience would be heavier than the burden of my sin of infidelity. And I'm here to tell you, I couldn't have been more wrong. The weight of what I have done and the ripple effect out to people I love, she said, I never, ever dreamed it would be this heavy. And it was just one of those things you don't even want to speak after. And you know, I've been looking at just kind of studying on wisdom as I've been speaking on that topic, Chris, and just how, you know, and the Bible says we can have as much as we want. I mean, ask for wisdom, God will give it to you. And then you see these verses that say, but woe to you who are wise in your own eyes. There's more hope for a fool than for you if you think you're wise. So I just dug into that a little bit. And what I found was two things that come out of being wise in our own eyes. We either become pagans or we become Pharisees. Pagans in that way, you're like, I got this. I can handle this. And Pharisees, I already know this. and I want to talk to the pagan side as far as when we sort of take it on our own as if I can handle this, I can always reel this back. We are already on a slippery slope, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it takes somebody outside of you to be able to tell this to you. And that's what in this story, you know, Rose tries to do that. She tries to be the person who speaks the truth into his life, but she's too close to it as well, you know?
Yeah.
And especially as a guy away from his family, if you have one of those kinds of jobs where you have to be away for a long amount of time, And you have these kind of daily temptations when nobody else is seeing you. You've got to see this as a red flag, and you got to respond to that. So, I mean, those are some practical things. But again, it gets to the heart level. You've got to be willing to admit, I don't have it all together here. Most people who fall into gross sin like that just don't believe that it can happen to them. You know, they don't think that, well, I'd never do that, of course, because I love my husband or I love my wife. And then they find themselves vulnerable in a situation, and the enemy, we do have an enemy of our souls, I believe, just loves to steal, kill, and destroy and he'll do that with our relationships.
And, you know, Proverbs warns us, Chris, that there are people who are set on seducing other people, no matter what the cost. And if you're in a particularly unfulfilling season of marriage, you might just happen upon one of them, or they may happen upon you. And you can see in a moment of vulnerability where that attention may sort of massage your ego, so to speak, but you don't realize how much it's threatening your footing. And I want you just to speak to that. I mean, I've, again, done shows on this, but even met women before who've said, I was so unhappy in my own marriage. I was looking just, and you can, and this one particular woman told me, you can look around the room and spot who is open to that kind of a relationship. And again, you cover so much on marriage and family relationships. Talk about just the hedges thing you mentioned and how a person can have boundaries around their life, even when they don't feel like they need them.
That very thing that you were just talking about, I remember sitting with Dr. Dobson and Focus on the Family doing that program for a while, and him saying, I don't remember if this was on air or off air, but he said, I remember going to dinner with someone, you know, in the Christian world, and Shirley came along, and we had this dinner, and afterwards we were talking about the meeting going home. And she had a totally different view of the person that they were with. And her feeling about the whole thing was that person's on the hunt. Mm. They are open to other people and could just sense it. And he said, I didn't pick that up at all. And there, I think there are, you know, people who have, we call it a gift or just an ability to see those types of things that are going on. You have to work so hard. Now I'm sounding like Dr. Dobson, aren't I? But he talked like this. you have to make a commitment. It is a conscious choice. This is not something that's just going to fall into your lap or that God's going to do without you agreeing with him. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times I think we want just God to protect us and guard us and us not to have to do anything about it. No, it is a, you know, our effort along with his mercy and grace in our lives that's going to be ready for this. You have to put on the armor, you know. So it's not an easy topic to discuss. And you can see even in this story that we've talked about how Jed falls short of this with somebody who initially brings some good things out of him. It's, you know, he's on the road and he's singing with this new person and she's just vibrant and life-giving and the music that they make is great. But there is a cost to this because she has these ulterior motives. She doesn't want just his music to get better. She wants to be a part of his life and intimately.
Mm. Well, you know, Jed is this man. He works to balance his career and his growing family. And I want, just for Jed's sake and for the men listening today, to give a picture of some of these honest struggles. Because, you know, just to I feel like the weight that you guys carry to provide, and God has wired you to be this person who's providing, who's working hard. And I'm sure the temptation at times, though, is to shift weight and get your value from the things that you're producing, because there's such an integral connection there. So talk about some of the honest struggles that he's dealing with, but even just to speak to the men who are listening, of that balance of working hard, pouring yourself into your work, but not getting your value and not missing your family in the midst of it.
Yeah. And you know what? It's kind of hard when it is your art that is on display,
mm-hmm.
because Jed is very much an accomplished musician, and Alan is a great musician as well. He's a great singer and a guitar player. but this is a part of him. This is like who he is. And it's so ingrained in his very nature to write these songs and to sing these, you know, these vulnerable things from his own life. And I find that to be the same with me. When I do a radio program or when I'm writing something, this is coming from me. So I'm not just digging a hole out in the backyard or, you know, putting in brick or doing that kind of thing. Not to put that work down. This is just so tied up in who I am. And I think when you do that type of thing, you have to be on extra guard because you can justify it, and you can say, well, you know, this is who I am. You got to take me who I am. And those types of things. And that didn't work with God. And it probably is not going to work with your spouse or your family either.
Mm. Well, you know, people ask me, Chris, oftentimes, how do I manage all that I manage? And honestly, 9 out of 10 times when I'm asked that question, your mug pops up in my mind. And I'm thinking, you really should ask Chris Fabry how he does all that he does. I'm very serious about this. So let's just go over what you manage. And I do give glory to God. And I think he's conditioned you and he's added these different roles one at a time. You didn't come upon it overnight. So I think he's trained you to manage it all. But let's just lay it out. So you do a 2-hour live talk show every day. Take it from there. Tell us everything else that you're doing.
I do the Love Worth Finding. You know, I host that program, and you mentioned the Dr. Gary Chapman, the Building Relationships, which is 1 hour a week, so that's not a big commitment. I work with Luis Palau as well with his short 2-minute radio program. And then I do my writing projects, and then I also have 9 children and a wife and a dog.
Yeah.
And sometimes the dog takes more effort, to be honest with you. He's a little morky. He's a Maltese Yorkie mix.
Oh, wow.
And we just got him cut yesterday. But he is, he's brought an awful lot of life to our home.
Mm.
The other thing that we deal with is we moved from Colorado to Arizona for health reasons. And we basically lost most of our possessions, if not all, up there, and have been digging out the last 7 years, which is a biblical number, from all of that, from, you know, a lawsuit and the home loss and, you know, medical bills that the insurance company and all of these things that just kind of life imploded and God allowed to happen, I believe, for a reason in our lives. And the thing that I find the hardest is to just tear away from this. I could always be doing something,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
I could always be writing something else. I'm working on another movie. It's going to come out toward the fall, so I could just be doing that all the time. And I have to physically stop. And when an email pops up, would you like to do this? There's a script that we need. Blah, blah, blah. The hardest thing to say is no. When you know, well, tomorrow they may not come to you, you know, they may not. And you have to choose faith over what I can do in my own strength at that point. And you have to say, you know what, I have enough on my plate. I do not need to be doing one more thing. I've got to go get milk with my kids tomorrow, you know, all of these things that are happening. I've got to go to the farmer's market or the blah, blah, blah. And the chores, you know, all of these things that are on the to-do list, you can live life on that to-do list and just keep heaping it up and up and up. You've probably talked with Lisa Turkhurst here, or you will, mm-hmm. about the best yes.
Mm-hmm.
Have you talked with Lisa yet?
I sure have, yep.
Yeah, and I got a hold, that book got a hold of me, and it's like, you know what, she's right. When I say no, I can live my best yes kind of life. And you do that on a day by day basis, on an email by email basis, and even doing this conversation with you, I knew, you know, I'm going to say I'm not going to pick my daughter up from high school, and this is going to go to my. I know what this is going to do, but this is important to me, so I'm going to say yes to this because I don't know how often Susie's going to call me in the future.
Please thank your wife for us.
I will.
That's so nice. Well, we need to take a quick short break. When we come back, I really would love to just have you talk a little bit more about the takeaway from the story. I want to know, Chris, too, just who you read, who inspires you, and what you're working on next. We've just got a few minutes when we come back, but just a few more questions for you. More with Chris Fabry when we get back.
we lose perspective sometimes, and we put things that aren't nearly as important above things that are. But I certainly don't think that it's specific to fame or specific to, you know, musical artists or actors or anything like that. I think that in our own lives, in our own ways, we lose perspective on what matters, mm-hmm. whether that's chasing a career or a hobby or, you know, who knows what it is. You can fill in the blank in your own life. But what we set out to do is just make people aware of how precious the gift of family is and how precious, you know, the gift of having people in your life that really matter. You know, it's a struggle that Jed deals with in this film, and ultimately comes to the realization that that's all that really matters in this life. And so I'm just very encouraged that people were able to take that away.
That was Alan Paul. I interviewed he and Allie Feltner. They're the co-stars of the movie The Song, and then Chris Faber came along and wrote the novel around it. The DVD comes out February 1st. This is sort of a modern retelling of The Song of Solomon. And this the main character, Chris, reminded me of kind of like a Joaquin Phoenix, kind of had this troubled, sobered spirit. You know what I mean? Like you could tell there was a lot going on for him. And here's a quote from the novel that you wrote. The truth was, Rose and Jed were both busy, and if there was anything that could kill the heart, it was two people who were busy with good things going in different directions. Separate lives with separate agendas going separate ways did not knit hearts together. And again, you've covered this kind of stuff on your show. Talk about just that very thing to the person listening who's maybe running parallel paths with their spouse and knowing that we're not knitted together. We're just running side by side.
I talked with somebody today on the program that I do who called and said, we haven't been married very long, but this is harder than I thought it was going to be. And that's what I hear coming through. You know, you're going in different directions. You're not together. Your hearts aren't together. You can do different things and still have your hearts together. It's that feeling of being disconnected from the other person. In the beginning, Rose is the one who goes with, she's the one who suggests to Jed, you know, you need to take this song. And so she's cheerleading, you know, she's his biggest fan. But this turns out to be the thing that kind of separates them in the end. And so I would say anybody who's feeling that kind of disconnection, this may be the best thing that could ever happen to you, to actually feel it right now, whether it's a year in or 5 or 10 or 50, I don't care how long it is, to recognize that and to say, okay, what are we going to do to address this thing? How are we going to sit down and have a conversation? Do you feel the same way that I'm feeling? Is you know, this marriage thing, is it everything you thought it was going to be? Are you okay with it? And usually there's one person in the marriage that feels like, we're fine, you know, it's working. But the other person is not. And this happened to me a number of years ago, especially after we started having kids, and we didn't stop for some reason. We had a couple of kids, and I say, you know, when you have that second child, and maybe it's when the third, when they finally outnumber you, that you just come to the end of yourself. And so it was this question of, are we going to move toward each other, or are we going to move away from each other? And I can tell you the struggles and the problems that we've had with health and other things, and with kids who've made bad choices, and everybody has kids who've made bad choices. Those kinds of things can separate you, or they can cement your relationship together when you move toward each other. And it doesn't have to look perfect. You're going to get a broken heart no matter what, you know?
Yeah.
There's no life is meant to break your heart, and God's heart was broken because of our choice and our rebellion. That can lead you toward the redemption that you really need, your relationship with God first, and then this reconciliation that you can have not only with Him but with other people. It sounds a lot easier to say, and it is say than to do. But I'm here to tell you from experience that it can happen because of His great love for us.
It's worth fighting for. You and I talked when you had you on last time to talk about the novel you wrote with, I think it was with Gary Chapman, right? Wasn't it? Is it Christmas Carol?
Yes, A Marriage Carol.
Marriage Carol. Loved that book. But you and I were talking about how so many people who fight for their marriage and they get through the valley and get on the other side, they actually enjoy a greater richness together than had they given up and tried to find it with someone else. Like the chances of deeper happiness are with the person you're actually now with, right?
Yes. Yes, and that is so, it sounds so flippant to say to somebody who is in the midst of it. And I understand you just want to flip the, you know, the radio off. Don't say this to me because it's not true. You don't understand. You don't you don't have my marriage. And that's true. But I have seen God do some amazing things in people's lives. And here's the secret. We think that if we were just healed, or if our spouse were just, you know, would come back to us, or we could mend this relationship, whatever, you know, the child, whatever the fissure in your life, we think that if that were to happen, then, oh, we could sigh and God would be good. But I'm here to tell you that God is, whatever that hurdle that you're facing right now, the fact that God is good is not going to be evidenced by the miracle of them coming back, though pray for that, and I pray that that will happen in your life. This is your opportunity to grow in ways that you never would have without the prodigal of child or spouse. So lean into God right where you are, right here, right now, and don't make the return of the spouse or the child, or whatever it is, don't make that the condition on which you're going to judge God. Because he doesn't do that with you.
Wow.
You know, he doesn't treat you that way.
Wow, so good. You know, I know for me, Chris, when I'm working my way through a book, it does something in me. Even though it's my content and I'm working my way through it, it sends my roots down, it confronts me, it challenges me. Did this book, you know, especially since the story was basically written and you were kind of giving backstory and context and all those things, what did it do in you? And did anything surprise you about that process?
Yeah, I think it was just, well, first of all, from a writer's perspective, I thought it was going to be very dull and boring, and it was going to be, you know, just slogging through, and it wasn't. And I don't think I'll write another novel the same way again, because when all of those decisions are, I'm a very much, you know, seat of the pants kind of, I get an idea, and I just run with it, and well, let's see what happens. And having all of those things, and then the next thing that I'm working on is the same way. All of the decisions, the big decisions, have been made. And there's such a freedom in that.
Mm.
And I think that leaks into our spiritual lives, too. You know, when you can rest in the sovereignty of God and what he's doing in your life, and you know that he is the one who is controlling, and I don't want to get too far down the road with that, but I know that he is allowing or causing these things in my life to come at me, and it's how I respond to them that is important, more important than whether it works out my way or not, you know?
Yeah.
So I think in that, with the mechanics of writing, you know, doing fiction, that was an eye-opener for me. And then just the importance of the continual relationship, the daily things that can separate you. You have to make a decision. I'm not going to have this happen to us. I'm not going to let this distance grow between us. And you can have this. You don't have to be on the road singing, you know, country songs. You can be living in the same. You can be working in the same house and have distance come up between you. So it's a daily conscious choice that you have to make.
Wow. Again, Chris, I know how busy you are and that you really had to say no to something to say yes, you know, to this interview. And so we wonder if you would just pause. In fact, if you don't mind, I'm going to pause and pray for you instead. Normally we have the guest pray, but I really do appreciate that you took the time. Can I just pause and pray for
Absolutely.
You? For
Absolutely. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Well, Father, thank you for Chris. Thank you for the gift of God in him and just how good you've been to him and his faithfulness to you. And I just pray a blessing on his marriage, his family, his radio ministry, his writing ministry. And I pray that he would have abundant grace to do the things that you've called him to do. And he'd have a strong discernment about the things you haven't called him to do. And would you guard and guide him every step of the way? And I pray you continue to surprise and bless him with all the things that you have for him down the road. Thank you for this, dear brother. In Jesus' name, amen.
God bless you, Susie. Thanks for your friendship and encouragement.
Oh, love it. If you have a minute to hang on before we go out, we'll be out in a minute. I want to tell you something real quick. And if you have to hang up, that's all right. So
No. I'm here.
Okay, we'll be back in just a sec. Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. You can find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Tune in tomorrow when I talk to Jeremy Camp. In fact, I recorded that today. we had church. It was such a powerful time. I absolutely don't want you to miss it. And then my good friend, Dr. Greg Smalley, comes back to the program. We're going to talk tomorrow about how to build a spiritual foundation in marriage. We'll take your calls. We'll give some books away. We always have a great time. So we've got another great show lined up for you tomorrow. Really glad you tuned in today. And remember this, I say it every day, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and He is the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day.